Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm guest host Eric Jansen, filling in for Joseph Pace. As part of our continuing election coverage, this hour we'll be talking about the closely watched race for San Francisco District 3 supervisor, which will be decided by voters next Tuesday. At least one recent poll shows the top two candidates in a dead heat, with serious money and endorsements coming in on both sides. The outcome will affect more than just District 3. What's at stake? Perhaps a shift in the delicate balance of power at City Hall. While District 3 includes Chinatown, North Beach, Union Square, and part of the Financial District, this midterm election will affect all of San Francisco because whoever wins this seat could be a crucial swing vote between moderate Mayor Ed Lee supporters and progressives who tend to challenge Mayor Lee's pro-development policies. Many political observers consider the District 3 supervisor's race a referendum of sorts on Mayor Lee's first term because it pits his appointee to the seat, incumbent Julie Christensen, against longtime progressive Aaron Peskin, who served on the Board of Supervisors for 8 years before being termed out in 2009. Longtime Chinatown small business owner, music professor, and community activist Wilma Pang is also in the race. Joining me in the studio to talk about this race and their positions on the important issues facing San Francisco, including some of the controversial propositions on the ballot, are the three District 3 candidates. Let's meet them. First, Julie Christensen, incumbent San Francisco supervisor for District 3. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you for having me.
And joining me are, well, at least one of her colleagues is here, former San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin. Welcome, Aaron.
It's a pleasure to be on City Visions. Thanks so much, Eric.
And the third candidate, music professor and community activist Wilma Pang, we hope will be here shortly. She's taking Muni today to our remote studios, and perhaps when she gets here, we'll talk about Muni. So thank you for joining us on City Visions. We invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation with your questions and comments for these candidates by calling 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. We'll start taking calls on the air in about 15 to 20 minutes, or you can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So, first of all, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to be here. Now, you've all been in active in San Francisco politics for decades. I'd like to start by having each of you tell us a little bit about yourselves and briefly describe your professional backgrounds. So, Julie, let's start with you. Mayor Lee appointed you back in January to fill the seat vacated by David Chu when he was elected to the Assembly. Tell us what you were doing before your service on the Board of Supervisors, and why did Mayor Lee choose you?
So I ran a consulting business for a little over 30 years, primarily to companies like KitchenAid, Whirlpool. I worked on Xbox, worked for Corningware and Pyrex. My job as a consultant was to come into companies that had lots of employees, lots of consultants, and address particularly challenging situations or problems. So I'd come in, try to figure out the best solution, and then hang around to implement the programs that we developed. And my success in my business was based on my ability to solve problems consistently and to get results for my clients. Same time, for about the last 20 years, I've devoted quite a lot of time to civic endeavors. So I've worked on the North Beach Library, on a number of playgrounds, working on trying to improve transit in the district. And so I have a number of multi-million dollar, fairly large and difficult projects that I've done for the city. So there's kind of that overlap between my civic and my professional life. And what Mayor Lee said to me when he asked if I would take the job is that he was looking for somebody who could represent the entire district. We have quite an interesting district, number of neighborhoods, Russian Hill, Polk Street, as you mentioned, Union Square, Chinatown, North Beach, Fisherman's Wharf. And so it's a challenge, I think, to represent the needs of all those different districts. And I'm a planner, a thinker by nature. And so I think knitting together our goals and trying to achieve kind of win-win situations as much as possible for such a diverse district is a challenge and one that I embrace.
Thanks very much. Aaron Peskin, you're a former supervisor from 2001 to 2009. In fact, you served as president of the Board of Supervisors for, was it your full second term? So
that's
it's 4 years.
Yes.
So you were termed out in 2009. So what have you been up to since you left office about 6 years ago?
Thanks for asking, Eric. I'm actually back at the same job that I had before I got elected to the Board of Supervisors. I'm the president of an environmental nonprofit. I got my start at the Trust for Public Land in the 1980s, buying land for parks and open space. and later on worked as the Western Director for the American Land Conservancy, and finally in the mid-1990s co-founded an environmental nonprofit that buys water rights to improve water quality flows in Western rivers, primarily for the benefit of Native American Indian tribes, the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe, the Zuni Tribe in New Mexico, the Summit Lake Paiute Tribe in northern Nevada, and that is the work that we do. It's actually mostly nonprofit real estate. We find owners of water rights that are willing to sell to these Indian tribes, in some cases to the state, in some cases to cities, and we arrange those transactions for public benefit.
Okay, thank you. So what? Why is this race important? First of all, maybe we just need to just take a moment and say, how does our city look now compared to 4 years ago or 8 years ago or however far back you want to go? There's been some big changes in the last several years. What do you see kind of briefly? We'll get in depth into some of the issues, but briefly, what do you see as the biggest challenges that we have right now? That's, I guess, a corporate word, challenge. It's not a problem. It's a challenge. Aaron Peskin.
So, I mean, this is the perfect topic for City Visions. It's about a vision of the city. I was honored to be on a board of supervisors that, together with mayors, had immense vision for the city. I was on the board of supervisors that forwarded the first municipal minimum wage of any city in the country. It has become commonplace. We did that before the state of California raised its minimum wage, before the United States of America raised the federal minimum wage. I was on a board of supervisors that, when I was president, we passed municipal universal health care, the first city in the country to do that, long before Barack Obama was even a candidate for the presidency of the United States. And in those days, we attended to the everyday quality of life details. Our streets were cleaner, our homeless population was smaller, and I think we need that vision returned to City Hall in the last half a dozen years. While we've had a huge boom, it has become both the best of times and the worst of times. I think it's time to deal with the worst of times, and I think that I have a demonstrated track record of bringing my colleagues together. I'm supported by virtually every single supervisor that I serve with, every elected woman supervisor that I serve with, and I think I have the ability to bring those thoughts back to City Hall.
Julie Christensen, what do you see as the key issues and challenges that San Francisco is facing now?
Well, I think getting back to planning. I mean, our city has undergone a number of peaks and valleys over the past 10, 20, 30 years. We've had boom times like the dot-com boom in the 2000s. Then we had the recession that followed. Now we're in another boom time. And I think that we haven't done as good a job as we should in planning for the long-term future of the city. And I think that's one of the issues that after we suffered through the dot-com boom, there wasn't enough attention to what was going to happen long-term for the city. Despite the peaks and valleys, our population has been increasing steadily for the last decades, and yet we haven't been building the housing or the transportation necessary to sustain it. Mayor Lee came on board when the recession was underway and the loss of jobs was a big concern. We were bleeding companies from the city. We had, I think, near 10% unemployment at the time, and everybody was very worried about the economic future of the city. Well, we have jobs now. What we don't have are the houses for people to live in or the transportation necessary for them to get around. And so I think there's a lot of suffering from that. I know in our district, a lot of people who are concerned about whether they can afford to stay in the city. I've worked for 20 years, for example, on trying to make our neighborhoods a better place for families and for seniors, and now we have to be concerned about whether they can afford to stay there. So I think in general, perhaps we've been doing too much of building projects and not building communities. I think we do need to build more housing in order to make our city more affordable. We also need to supply the transportation and amenities necessary to support that. And that overall vision has to some degree been lacking for a while, and we're now reaping the consequences of that.
So let's just look at the balance of power, if we can call it that, on the Board of Supervisors now. As I understand it, it's a 6-5 kind of split and mostly supportive of Mayor Lee right now. If Aaron Peskin was elected back to his old seat, that would shift back. Is that a fair, very simple, simplistic perhaps, but is that basically what's at stake here?
I would jump in and I would say it's not about allegiance to the mayor as much as it is about independence and allegiance to your constituents. And I say with all due respect to Supervisor Christensen that it comes with a burden when you're appointed. I am seeking the affirmation of the electorate to be an independent supervisor that doesn't have to march in lockstep or check my back when I want to cast an independent vote. And I think democracy is best served when the People's Chamber, the legislative branch, the lawmaking body, is independent of the executive branch. And the executive branch has most of the power under our charter. I think it's very important that we have an independent branch of government. It transcends progressive. It transcends moderate. It is really about being fundamentally independent. And by the way, we've had many instances in American and San Francisco history where when legislative and executive branches weren't working in lockstep, some of the most creative things happened, like the universal health care that I spoke to earlier, like the minimum wage that I spoke to earlier, like the same-sex marriage that came out of Mayor Newsom's shop but was heartily supported by all 11 members of the Board of Supervisors.
Julie Christensen, sounds like perhaps there was a little calling into question your independence. Would you? Is that fair? Did I interpret that right?
I think that's been Mr. Peskin's pitch. But you know, anyone in my position right now would have been appointed by Mayor Lee. It's inescapable, right? He had the power to appoint Mr. Chu's successor. So I'm in this role because of that process. I think if you want to see what happens when an executive and a legislative body are at war, we can sort of look to Washington, D.C. for how much fun that can be. I think our own Board of Supervisors back in the first decade of this century was often at gridlock. And so I don't think the split on the board is perhaps quite as simple as it seems. As somebody who's been working hard for the last 10 months at City Hall, I can tell you things are not so sharply aligned, perhaps, as it seems sometimes. But, you know, there are, I believe all of us at the board see many of the same issues. I think we would agree that housing is a major concern. I think public safety, our homelessness issues, street cleanliness. I mean, there are a whole list of issues that I think all of us on the board and the mayor would agree on. I think where we differ is how best to solve those problems. And while the mayor and I agree on a lot of things, our interest in transportation and public safety, our interest in families and seniors, there are certainly areas where we don't see eye to eye. I have a record in 20 years of advocacy of bending City Hall to my will. I've been able to get a number of neighborhood projects on the boards and executed, which were not always popular or a priority for City Hall. And so I've already seen evidence that's something I can do at City Hall in terms of determining priorities and getting buy-in from the mayor and from city departments to execute them. So I don't think you always have to be at war or name-calling or jabbing at people in order to accomplish something. In my career as a consultant, I certainly didn't get invited back time after time because I called my clients' names, and yet we were able to accomplish, you know, quite a bit. So I think some collegial atmosphere is helpful, but I'm certainly not a type of person to be cowed or to shrink from any kind of disagreements.
Fair enough. You're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we have two of the candidates for San Francisco Supervisor of District 3, and we hope that we will be joined very soon by Wilma Pang. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134, or send us an email, cityvisions@kalw.org. How do you feel, listeners, about this election changing the balance of power at City Hall? Is it better for the city to have a Board of Supervisors whose majority supports the mayor on most issues or checks the mayor's power? Do you feel the city is in a better or worse situation since Mayor Ed Lee took office in 2011? To what extent should that affect the election for District 3 supervisor? Before we get to calls, and we do have a couple emails already, I do want to quickly ask briefly, talk to us about the amount of money that's in this campaign. It seems to have attracted money from outside of the district. We're talking about almost $1 million between the two of you has been raised. I think it's fairly even. I don't have the exact figures right in front of me, but maybe you can tell me for each of your campaigns what it is. Can you do that? Your expenditures to this point, Aaron Peskin?
I believe that we filed a report last week showing that, including public financing, our campaign had raised some $530,000 and had expended some $462,000 to date.
Okay, yeah, I do have, actually just found the forms that producer Ann gave me.
And I want to thank all of the contributors from the district and from around the city for their confidence in us, and it's been really heartwarming to see almost 2,000 contributions to this campaign from as small as $2 to the maximum of $500. It's been quite heartwarming.
And Julie Christensen, what about you? What can you tell us about your campaign income and expenditures,
so,
roughly?
You know, there has been a lot of emphasis about the money in this campaign. I think there's no question that both Aaron and I have had plenty of opportunity to have our words put out there. You know, Aaron's outraised me and outspent me. You know, we've both got support from different independent expenditure committees, but you know, I've tried to focus on the message. You know, I am not a politician. You know, Aaron's got lots of experience raising money and running campaigns. This is the first time for me. And I have tried to focus on the message. It's the reason I got involved. Was because of issues I cared about. And so jumping into that political arena has been an experience for me. It's not my favorite part of this whole thing. But I do think, you know, lots of money's been spent. You know, people have sided on camps. And, you know, again, you know, there have been a lot of people that have come forth to be helpful and supportive on both sides. What I hope is that we can focus on what it is we're trying to do, the problems that we're trying to solve. And after several months of getting mail, you're never sure that, you know, that the right words are getting out there and the right ideas are being brought to the fore. We're going to keep trying.
Before I go to the calls, I just want to ask you, there's this independent expenditures group called Friends of Julie Christensen that, according to some reports I've seen, has pulled in almost $500,000 since mid-September. So that's in addition to what your campaign itself has. Is that correct? Do you know about this?
I don't know the new numbers on that group, but I can tell you from the comparisons I've seen, there's been a lot of independent expenditure money on both sides.
Okay.
And I believe we're a little behind in that.
And I'll ask Aaron Peskin about that, too. But from what I understand, a big real estate investor, Thomas Coates, who's an opponent of rent control, has put in over $100,000 to the Friends of Julie, and tech investor Ron Conway as well.
Well, I just the thing I think that's interesting, you know, Aaron has a track record. He has a reputation. So I guess any money spent against him is presumed to be for me. But in a way, I'm the small player in this race, right? There are a lot of behemoths fighting it out above our heads.
Okay.
And I got in this for my community, for my constituents, and I've tried to remain focused on that.
Okay, so I'm going to take a call, I promise. But Aaron Peskin, is that fair to say? Is Ron Conway's donation basically, essentially, is it against you and what you stand for?
Follow the money, as they say in the media. And if you follow the money, a lot of the money rolls up to city policy that is right now before the board, that's been in front of the board. It's all about the regulation, the reasonable regulation of short-term rentals that have taken hundreds of rent-controlled units off the market. The
recent vote, for example.
The recent vote that benefited Airbnb has resulted in almost $300,000 by Airbnb investors against my candidacy and for the appointed incumbent's candidacy, and $128,000 of that comes from one of the Series A investors, Mr. Conway, and there's money from other Series A investors, Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn, and the list goes on and on. A lot of it associated with Sequoia Capital, Casola Ventures, and they're making an investment in making sure that their $25 billion investment continues to grow.
Okay, let's take a call. Let's take.
So, do I get to address that?
Oh, I'm sorry. If you would, please.
So, if you want to talk about Airbnb, shall we do that? Because that's really what this is about, or about short-term rentals?
Well, I'm planning to get to a segment on, we'll specifically talk about that. But you're right. Aaron made some strong statements there.
The accusation is that for a contribution of any amount that I would vote a certain way. I haven't shown any indication that I'm going to be swayed. I mean, I think we can go through, Aaron's contributors as well. Aaron's got people who have evicted people. He's got a lot of the same developers. He's called many of the same people that have contributed to my campaign. So I think what's at stake here is doing the right thing for the city and doing it in the right way. And if we're going to talk about that later, we can talk about it. But I think issues like short-term rentals, the moratorium in the Mission, there are a lot of things that have to be worked out. And the political theater and the easy answers are not always the simplest. And that's been one of the challenging things, that it's easy to rise to the political theater and to do things that don't make sense legislatively. It's easy to make campaign promises that don't pan out in the long term.
Thank you. I want to go to Tony now in San Francisco. Tony, you're on City Visions. Welcome to the show.
Having me. Thanks very much. I'm a parent. My wife and I have three kids. We live in a classic North Beach flat with no backyard, no front yard. We don't even have a garage. And we face a lot of challenges. Our kids are in public schools there, which we love. We actually love our neighborhood public schools, Yik Wu and Francisco and Marina. But we need amenities. We need parks, playgrounds, libraries. We need open space because we don't have backyards and front yards like they do in the suburbs. And we just need space to raise our kids, because we've decided the city's a great place for us, but I feel like we need people who are supporting families, and I'm wondering if you can each outline what you've done to promote family-friendly initiatives and policies so that families like mine can stay in San Francisco, stay in North Beach, and continue to contribute to this community.
Tony, thanks for your call. Julie, do you want to take that first?
Well, keeping families in our neighborhood, trying to make the city a good place to raise them, is the reason that I got involved in neighborhood advocacy over the past couple decades. I've been involved in the creation of the North Beach Library, of a number of playgrounds and open spaces, trying to work on transportation opportunities for families. And so, families and seniors have really been at the heart of why I've given up so much of my paid time to work for the city and for the people in the community. I was constant in my support for the North Beach Library, although Aaron kind of wavered in that support. We were able to build a great facility. I've been endorsed by the Parent Pack, have support, I think, of a lot of the neighborhood families. And that's really key. As I said, the amenities are important. They won't matter unless we can keep the families there. So I think the issue of housing affordability is important. I've been able to pass legislation to add more rent-controlled apartments in the district, which is, I think, one of the ways that we can try to keep people by making housing available. So that's really been fundamental to the motivation that I've had for my volunteer work and for seeking the job of supervisor.
Aaron Peskin, Tony's question about
open
space.
Thanks for the question, Tony. I think that Supervisor Christensen and I have done a lot of work together. As a matter of fact, I tapped her early on the rebuild of the Helen Wills Playground that I was able to get funding for both at the state and local levels. I am the co-author of the 2008 Rec and Park Bond. I am a co-author of the library bond and the funding for the library that built the North Beach Library, as well as the author of the legislation that acquired the property that the North Beach Library is built on. I'm very proud of work that we did with the community to create the newest park in District 3, Sue Bierman Park, which was slated for development after the demolition of the Embarcadero Freeway. I passed legislation to double St. Mary's Park in size. But really, to answer Tony's question, I was the author of legislation to build affordable family housing on former freeway parcels at Broadway and Battery, Broadway and Sansom, preserved affordable housing at 1590 Broadway at the corner of Van Ness, have ambitious plans to build more affordable housing at the Kirkland Bus Yard, at the abandoned school on Filbert Street, the John Hancock Elementary School. I passed legislation to reduce Ellis Act evictions that said that anybody who had done an Ellis Act eviction would be prohibited from getting a condo lottery ticket for a period of 10 years. My track record on taking care of tenants and tenants' rights and tenants' issues is, I think, very, very good, which is why I'm endorsed by the San Francisco Tenants Union, the Affordable Housing Alliance, the Community Tenants Association. So I think a lot of it is about addressing the affordability crisis and making sure that Tony and his family can continue to live in North Beach.
Yeah, but at the same time, Aaron, you actually actively campaigned against the 2012 Park Bond. You voted against the Education Endowment Fund. You worked against the North Beach Library. I think there's a checkered pattern there of actually focusing on the needs of families in the neighborhood.
So, Eric, let's take those in order relative to the 2012 Parks Bond. I was on a board that was fiscally remarkably prudent. We were the first board to actually create a capital planning committee. Thank you, Supervisor Sean Ellsmern, for your vision in that regard. And it was a plan that we failed to stick to in 2012. The big issue for Rec and Park isn't capital money, it's operating money. We build these new facilities, these new clubhouses, but we don't have sufficient staff to staff them, but yet we want to raise more capital money. We need to take care of Rec and Park on the operating side. And that was the quibble that I had with the 2012 Parks Bond, which was not pursuant to the city's adopted capital plan. Relative to the North Beach Library, let me just say there is not a single piece of testimony from me. I never opposed that project. You can repeat it as much as you want, Supervisor Christensen, but it is not true. I had friends who supported it. I had friends who opposed it. I was out of office at the time. I was no longer a decision maker, but I am delighted for the work that you did to achieve that project, and I salute you. I think it's a wonderful facility.
But that board cut Rec Park's operating capital every year for 8 years in a row.
Okay, let's hold it there and
move
on to some other topics. Let's go on to Ken. Excuse me. Let's go to Lee first, and then I'm going to go to Ken next. Lee from San Francisco. Welcome to City Visions. Are you there, Lee?
Oh, yes. My question is to Julie. I wanted to know what role she played as a member of SPUR. And did she support their endorsement of 8 Washington? Thank you.
Thanks for the call, and please explain to us briefly what 8 Washington
is.
It's a big high-rise development along the waterfront that was proposed,
yeah,
right?
It was a development that was proposed on the waterfront right next to the large tower of the Golden Gateway, sort of near the Embarcadero Center. And so I think Lee's referring to the fact that I served on the board of the San Francisco Planning and Urban Resource Group for a while. And so, Lee, I was excited about the idea of adding housing along the corridor between the financial district and Barbary Coast. I think there are many parts of our district that want to remain low-rise, but at the same time, the need for our district to try to do its part to add affordable housing. The Golden Gateway, which is right next door, was certainly a high-rise development that was placed along that same border. So I was initially excited about the opportunity to add housing there. The way the project developed and the concerns about the loss of open space landed up concerning me about the project, and I did not take a position on it at the time. I was deeply involved in fundraising for the North Beach Library and the Joe DiMaggio Playground at the time that that project was being debated. But I have made a commitment as supervisor to involve the residents in that area in any decisions about projects going forward. I've brought in neighborhood input to a project that's now proposed for Broadway, and we've been looking at that from a neighborhood perspective. And I've also committed to taking a new look at the properties that were involved at the 8 Washington site, the part of its port property, part of its private property, and to make sure that any development that goes forward sort of starts from scratch and takes a new approach. I think it's pretty clear that the voters and the residents in that area have expressed a strong concern about the height or density of buildings in that area, and that that's going to be a key factor to anything that's done going forward.
Aaron Peskin, do you have any words to add to that?
I do, and with all due respect to Supervisor Christensen, who sets herself forward as a planner, real planning isn't done on a case-by-case spot zoning basis. I am proud to have been president of a board of supervisors that rezoned 22% of the city. All of the development that you see now on Upper Market, on Octavia Boulevard, at the Bayview Hunters Point Shipyard, on Rincon Hill, in the south of Market, in the eastern neighborhoods, that was all passed as a part of a series of comprehensive rezoning measures. 8 Washington was wrongheaded from the start. After we ripped down the Embarcadero Freeway and reunited San Francisco with its waterfront, one connected, politically connected developer tried to raise the height limits there by 150%. It passed the Board of Supervisors, unfortunately. It was luxury housing, $5 million units that none of us could afford. And the mayor signed that into the law. And were it not for my action and that of the gentleman who just called in and thousands of other people who contributed and went to the streets and got 33,000 signatures to put that referendum on the ballot, where we were outspent $2.7 million to $500,000. But the voters of San Francisco saw through it, and they rejected that proposal on a 2-to-1 basis. And that gave me a lot of hope about San Francisco. There's a right way to develop a city, and there's a wrong way to develop a city. And when you make those mistakes, they last for generations. And I'm delighted that San Francisco rejected that. And I think it says a lot about the differences in our candidacies. I was doing many other things at the time as well. I can fundraise for the North Beach Library and oppose a horrible development proposed for our waterfront.
Okay, stop right there. Good. It's got a lot of callers and a lot of other things to get to. We're going to definitely spend some time on housing, a little bit more time on housing affordability, evictions, and so on. I do want to take Ken from San Francisco. He has a question about Muni. Welcome, Ken.
Yeah, hi. And a quick comment first. It is interesting how progressives are often assailed as those preventing development of housing and real estate and all that. But in fact, it's interesting if you look back at the track record over the last decade, the person who greenlighted more development in the city of San Francisco was the uber lefty, Chris Daley. Kind of an interesting little fact that most people would not identify. So here's my question about Muni. Now, the board is a legislative body. I believe MTA, the Municipal Transportation Association, is under the mayor. But I'm wondering what the supervisors would do to improve Muni. As I see it, a 30-year resident, Muni daily rider, miserable with the experience. The buses are dirty. They're overcrowded. And I think that the problem is rot at the top at the MTA because they do not do the most basic thing that this agency should do, and that's put the passenger first and consider changes from the point of the passenger. So what we've had in the last few months is changing the 38 Limited to 38R. So they spent a ton of money to change an L to an R with no other change. I feel really hosed by that. And they have basically not improved or cleaned the buses up. And their other latest idea is, oh, you know what? The transfers drivers give out sometimes are too long. Let's put
Ken,
in a
let's
whole
rein it in a little bit and let the candidates answer the question, okay? Thank you, Ken. Would you like to? Who wants to go first on this one? Julie Christensen, looks like you're about ready.
You know, good news and bad news. Like I said, I think transportation has suffered. We've recently seen an infusion of funding for transportation. We've authorized the purchases of new equipment. These are buses that are easier to get on, are less likely to break down, so they're going to be in service more often. You know, overall, I think our system is going in a good direction, though we have a long way to go. I'm very concerned about the fact that if we don't continue to improve our public transit system, that private individuals are going to keep trying to take up that slack. And I think we need a strong public transit system for equality and to keep the city moving. I've been very proud of my efforts before I was supervisor and continuing on now to try to extend the Central Subway to North Beach and Fisherman's Wharf. I think we need to look at the major transit lines like Van Ness and Geary and do right by them in order to have those major corridors serviced. But I've been consistent in my support for transportation. In the case of the Central Subway, I think, you know, again, Aaron has supported it, then not supported it. I think he's back on board with it. But I think we've got to have that long-term vision to really support key changes to our transportation system to make it work well over time. And that means some tough decisions in terms of focusing resources to that end.
Aaron Peskin on transportation, Muni, and other, both in your district, within District 3, and around the city.
Sure. Thanks, Ken. First of all, let me just say that I think we all, the government, made a mistake. And the mistake that we made was we devolved power that made the MTA answerable to the legislative branch. It started in 1999 with Proposition E, which was a charter amendment that made them very autonomous. And it went on with Proposition A in 2007, of which I was one of the authors. And it really has meant that the MTA and the MTA Commission, just as you said, is really only answerable to the executive branch and is not answerable to the legislative branch of government, which is where most of the interaction with the citizens and people of this town happens.
So if someone complains to you about Muni, you can't do anything about it.
I think it is time to put the supervisors back on the hot seat. This was a brainchild of SPUR, San Francisco Planning and Urban Research. I think I should not have listened to them. I am proud that Prop A raised over $200 million new dollars for the MTA, and in many cases, throwing money at a problem is not the solution. But we need, you want specifics, we need to have a vehicle license fee in San Francisco, and that is something that we ought to pursue. And I hope that we will have the political will to do that. I know that the administration has been very reluctant to do that, but it is time to move forward with a VLF, and it is time to return accountability of MTA to the Board of Supervisors and the mayor.
But you authorized the proposition that took it away? Is that right?
Supervisor, if you listen to my comments, I said it started in 1999, and I was very honest and forthright in saying that I should not have listened to SPUR, and indeed, I think it is time to revisit that.
So it's first of all.
You're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, on the web at KALW.org. I'm Eric Jansen. With me in the studio here is Aaron Peskin, former San Francisco supervisor who's trying to get his seat back in District 3, and the incumbent supervisor, Julie Christensen, who was appointed by Mayor Ed Lee in January of this year. We do have a couple lines open again. If you would like to call in with your questions or comments, our phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Do you live in District 3? Do you spend time in Chinatown, North Beach, or the Financial District? What do you think are the most important issues facing those neighborhoods and the city in general? And what do you think about this election possibly changing the power dynamics at City Hall? What frustrates you about today's San Francisco, and what would you like these candidates to do about? Now is the time to tell them directly or ask what questions you have about City Hall and San Francisco politics. Again, the number for your questions or comments is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134, or email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. That's cityvisions@kalw.org. Let's go to Henry from San Francisco. Henry, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, thank you. So my question I have is, what kinds of systems of oppression do you see operating in our neighborhood, and how, and what would you do to modify or remove those systems of oppression?
Who wants to take that first? Aaron Peskin.
Yeah, let me give you a very, very specific answer, which is I would move forward with legislation to require market-rate luxury housing developers to build a significantly higher percentage of affordable housing in new developments. When I was on the board, we required 15%. It has actually, unfortunately, been lowered to 12%. I believe that we have seen in developments like Forest City at Pier 30, the proposed Mission Rock development that is the subject of this November's Proposition D, that as much as 40% affordable housing can be built in new large developments. I think that it's time for the Board of Supervisors to act and enact legislation along those lines.
Julie Christensen.
Didn't Prop C take care of that? I don't know. So I think you talk about oppression. There are many kinds, of course. I mean, sitting in the Board of Supervisors over the past 10 months, we've heard from a lot of people who feel that they are not being treated well. But I think overall in the city, we are looking for a better equality to make the playing field a little more level for people. As an advocate, I tried to do that by providing public amenities like libraries and parks and transportation. As a supervisor, I've been trying to do that by improving our housing situation. Certainly our school system, I've heard from a lot of parents about the needs to focus more attention on our schools and on our teachers. I think there is a certain heaviness in the city right now. A lot of good things going on, but you know, the conditions of the streets, the congestion, lack of cleanliness, the homelessness. We want to feel you can walk out of your door and do so safely. Although violent crime is down, we've certainly seen a rise in property crime. So I think there's a sense that we just need to sort of get our act together and focus on these quality of life issues. And I've been campaigning now for several months. I think I've knocked on about 3,000 doors. And I hear the same thing over and over from people. They want to know they can stay in the city. They want to feel safe when they walk out of their door. They want to know that we are making some headway on the homeless situation. And they want to be able to go about the city in a way that that makes them happier, I think. And we've seen a lot of cuts in federal and state funding for a lot of our key services. The city has had to take up a lot of slack there. But I do think that we need to spend the money that we have more wisely. I think there are a number of ways that we can improve service delivery in the city. On a very local, on a district level, I've been working with the police, with the Department of Public Health, with the Department of Public Works, trying to do things both short-term and long-term that'll improve that quality of life.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Mark. Mark also calling from San Francisco. Mark, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you. Mr. Pache, you said in your opening that this election in District 3 is seen largely as a referendum on Mayor Lee's performance as mayor, and I'd really like to hear from each candidate what are your impressions of the important points of Mayor Lee as mayor.
Very good. Thank you, Mark. By the way, this is not Joseph Pache. He will be back. I'm Eric Jansen, filling in for Joseph. Julie Christensen, do you want to take this one first about what's Mayor Lee's tenure?
Well, I said in the beginning, I think the mayor and I agree on some things, not on other things. I think it my goal in running for this position has been the people in my district, and it's been challenging with all the conversations that have been going on. It's been challenging to keep focused on that. Because I think this race is important to the city as a whole. There's been a tendency to look at it in terms of that big picture. But at the same time, you know, I'm out in the district pretty much every day. I'm talking to people there. And my motivation for being a district supervisor, I don't want to be mayor. I don't want to be assemblyman or state senator. I want to be a very good supervisor. And my motivation has been the people of my district. And I hope in all this conversation about the bigger picture that we recall, you know, that the reason we have district supervisors is to make sure that the needs of the district are addressed in addition to the needs of the city as a whole. And so that's where I've tried to keep, you know, my focus as much as possible. And I think we've addressed this a little bit before. I think the mayor and I have disagreed. We will disagree, and I'm hoping that we can do so amicably, and that I can continue to bring the power of City Hall, of both branches, to the needs of the district.
Aaron Peskin, what do you think this says about Mark's comments about Mayor Lee and his tenure?
So it's the best of times and the worst of times in the city and county of San Francisco. We obviously have very low unemployment. That's a wonderful thing. We have rising income inequality that is rivaling third world nations. We have thousands, literally thousands of people who are being evicted. And the silence at City Hall until recently has been deafening. This has been 5 years in the making as the streets have gotten dirtier. Do you know that today the city's budget is almost 40% larger than when I left office at the beginning of 2009?
I do understand it's grown quite a bit. Do you know the figure currently?
It's $8.92 billion. It was $6.5 billion when I left office. My question is, you know, respectfully to the administration and to the board, where's that other $3.5 billion gone? How is it that our streets are dirtier, that our homeless population has increased, that we're not doing what is being proposed in New York to give renters who are being evicted on nuisance violations a modicum of legal support? 100% of landlords are represented by council. The majority of tenants are not. There are so many things that we can do to stabilize our environment in District 3 and outside of District 3. In District 3, we see some of the poorest and some of the richest people in San Francisco. The number of short-term rentals that have led to entire rental units being taken off of the market, and City Hall is doing little, if anything, to enforce it. The same thing goes for the Academy of Art, or as I jokingly say, the Academy of Real Estate, that has taken hundreds and hundreds of units of rent-controlled housing off of the market at the southern end of District 3. These things need independent legislators who are going to stand up and do the right thing, even when you have very well-heeled, politically connected interests. And that's precisely why I'm running, is to bring that independent voice back to City.
We've got dozens of actions underway currently against short-term rental violators in the city, in the district. And so I think we are making some headway there.
Well, let's talk about two of the propositions briefly that are on the ballot, because I think these are two propositions that are some of the big ones that you two here in the room have different opinions on. Proposition F, the one to limit short-term rental housing, Airbnbs, which is in the opposition to it, is majorly funded by Airbnb, and Proposition I about a moratorium on development in the Mission District. Julie,
well, again,
let's start with you briefly. I mean, which let's just say, where do you stand on both the issues briefly, and then we can get down to talk about more specific nitty-gritty details.
So I think, again, it's what I've been saying. I think we agree on the problem, right? The illegal short-term rentals are a problem that needs to be reined in. The development and the Mission that has been jarring and displacing for residents there needs to be addressed. My concern is that these ballot measures are not the way to address them. Stopping building in the Mission for 18 months is not going to lower rents. It's not going to save small businesses. It's not going to keep artists in their studios. It's not going to roll back the clock in the Mission. Should things be done to do all those things? Absolutely. But stopping construction will not do it. I absolutely agree that illegal short-term rentals need to be reined in. And as I said, I've been working hard to encourage the setting up of the short-term rental office. We have a number of actions underway right now with them in the district. But a ballot measure, which can only be changed by going back to the voters, is to me a cumbersome way to control that. And so I think we need to set up this office. We need to pass the legislation that will get people to register and that will control the short-term rentals. I just don't agree that the ballot is necessarily the most effective way to do it.
Aaron Peskin, what do you think about Julie Christensen's criticisms or suspicions about these ballot measures?
Ken, what I think is that when City Hall fails to lead, the electorate goes directly to the ballot because there is a need. And because the board, on a 6-5 vote, including Supervisor Christensen, refused to enact reasonable regulations that would prevent illegal short-term rentals, that would prevent units from being taken off the market, the electorate took things in their own hands and went directly to the ballot. It would be very simple for the Board of Supervisors to say, as a matter of law, that if units were not registered, Airbnb would be prohibited as a matter of law from listing them. The current scheme, quite frankly, is unenforceable. It is designed to be unenforceable. Out of some 10,000 units of short-term rentals in the city, less than 1,000 have registered. The short-term rental enforcement is not, office is not a panacea. They're putting little drops of water on a raging fire, and City Hall has failed to deal with it. The same thing is true about the Mission. Had the Board of Supervisors enacted a short-term moratorium and a timeout in the Mission, which has been done many, many times before throughout the city and cities throughout America, they could have put in place long-term permanent controls that would deal with the crisis in the Mission, where some 8,000 Latinos have been displaced in the last half a dozen years. And they failed to do that. And as a result, people in the Mission took things in their own hands. Far be it for me, at least, to tell those people that they should not have a modicum of influence over the destiny of the neighborhood that they live in and love.
I think we know that ballot measures are not a panacea. We've certainly had a lot of ballot measures that were ill-conceived and had unintended consequences. So I think they're not always the best way to take care of problems. I certainly understand the frustration that a lot of people have with things wanting to move faster. I've been pushing as hard as I can for the Office of Short-Term Rentals to get set up. But the fact is, it's the same body that's going to have to enforce any policy that we pass. So if we don't get that set up, nothing's going to work.
Enforcement is always a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's go next to Jacob. Jacob, you're on City Visions. Thanks for your call.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm making City Visions. I've been listening, and I noticed that both Ms. Christensen and Mr. Peskin, in passing, mentioned the homeless population of San Francisco, which, as we know, is at best stable and at worst growing rapidly. And although the city of San Francisco provides many services to the homeless population, thankfully, and spends quite a lot of money, more money than most cities, there is still a very large homeless population, and with many homeless people feeling that they have nothing to do and no place to go in life, and at the end of the rope. So I'm wondering what, as supervisor, you would do to address this problem.
Supervisor Christensen, let's start with you.
Well, Steph, we've already been doing. I think there's short-term and long-term answers. I think long-term, we all recognize that mental health and substance abuse issues are at the core. I think the estimates are that as many as 80% of the people that are homeless have problems. I think that, it's been, what, 3 decades now? We haven't compensated for the lack of federal and state funding to provide adequate services. And we certainly, no talk of replacement for the Hall of Justice or for our jail system should happen without a look at the mental health services that we provide. We are trying some new things. The Navigation Center, I think, has given us a lot of hope. This is a new facility that the city opened in March that's already had over 200 people pass through it, over 100 of which have either found housing or been sent home to family and friends. So I think we are seeing some new ideas, but what we need more than anything is an overhaul of our system. I've been looking at, as a supervisor, at our intake and processing system, at how we house long-term homeless people. And I think all of that needs revamping so that we can do it more efficiently. In the meantime, I've brought extra passes from the Department of Health into the district. We've been doing more outreach and really targeting the people that we see in the district. I think a lot of people don't realize there's been such a great migration of homeless people in the district that, as you mentioned, Eric, that the numbers have stayed fairly consistent, but that because of construction, mostly in the south part of the city, that we're seeing a movement of these people. And they're now coming into neighborhoods where they haven't been seen before, where people are more aware of them.
Downtown San Francisco Financial District. I mean, it seems to me a few years back, there was a concerted effort to clean up, I put that in quotes, Golden Gate Park, and these people have to go somewhere. Now,
right.
Maybe that's a simplistic answer. Aaron Peskin, is this a problem of finding better programs, or is it a more basic problem that needs to be addressed in other ways?
Well, let me first say that I am delighted that the administration and the board are finally turning their attention to this after jobs, 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 and development, 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 and displacement, what have you. There was a fascinating article in this Sunday's Chronicle written by Heather Knight that showed that over 70% of the homeless population, contrary to public opinion, urban myth, are actually San Franciscans. And I think the number one way you get to that is to deal with the eviction crisis. A lot of these people are people who were at the bottom rung of the ladder and have been evicted from their places because those places are worth so much money and they didn't have legal representation. I think we need to deal with the eviction crisis, number one. Number two, with all of this newfound money that we have, this $9 billion budget that we have, why can't we open our homeless shelters during the day? Why does everybody get kicked out at 6 o'clock in the morning? We can reprioritize the resources that we have to keep our homeless shelters open. Indeed, that's the whole underlying concept of the Navigation Center. I salute our former mayor, Gavin Newsom, with Homeless Connect. A lot of that has atrophied in the last number of years, and it's time to put renewed emphasis into that, and it's time to hold the administration and the executive branch accountable. I think that the electorate is starting to do that, and I fully intend to do that and give it my best.
But we have time for just one more quick question. I'm going to go to Jenny on line one, and then we're going to have to wrap up. Jenny, thanks for calling City Visions.
Well, you're welcome. This question is for Julie Christensen. I want to know why is it your topic on seniors is not that big and that great? We have many displaced seniors. We have many seniors that have been on a waiting list to move into facilities for the seniors for 8 years or more. The SROs in your district, in the Mission, in all the districts in San Francisco are filled with seniors who received their pension, received their Social Security because they worked all their life.
Jenny, I'm going to have to ask you to keep it really short because we're almost out of time. I want to let the candidates answer the question. Thank you for your call.
So Jenny, seniors are a soft spot for me. And I've been, as I say, I work very hard both as a volunteer in my own time and as a supervisor to focus on that issue. I was really happy recently. There was an affordable housing project that the city had targeted on Broadway near Front Street, and I was able to add 50 units devoted specifically to seniors in that project. I passed legislation that allows for the addition of new apartments inside existing buildings as long as a space meets code. If you can make a nice apartment there, if you have extra space in a building, you can now circumvent the density limits and add apartments. I think a lot of these apartments are likely to be at the ground floor where they're a little bit more accessible, and they should be affordable. So I am trying very hard specifically for seniors in the district.
Let's let Aaron Peskin answer that, and then we're going to have to close up. Aaron Peskin.
I agree with Supervisor Christensen. There's much more that we can and should do for our senior population that's aging in place. And the most important thing that we can do is strengthen rent control, strengthen eviction protections, and make sure that they have the opportunity to live in an affordable city. And finally, I just want to say that it's been a pleasure to be on your show. And the process of running for office, at least for me in the last half a dozen months, has been quite enjoyable. And I want to thank all the folks that I'm meeting on the streets and at the doors and on the telephone for being so gracious. And don't forget to vote on November 3rd.
That sounded like a closing statement, so I'm going to give you 30 seconds as well, Julie Christensen.
Well, as I say, we've talked a lot of big issues, but I think we do want to focus on the needs of individuals. And I do think we want to plan ahead. You know, a lot of the people that are homeless on the street have been homeless for 10 and 20 years. A lot of the people that are looking for housing here have been in that situation for a long time. So I think these are long-term problems that require a look at long-term solutions, not with any one administration or in any particular time. And I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues at City Hall and with my constituents to try to do some of that planning and move us forward.
Thank you very much. That's City Visions for the evening. My guests were San Francisco Supervisor Julie Christensen, incumbent in District 3, and former San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin. We were hoped to be joined by Wilma Pang. She was invited. She could not be here, and so I apologize for that. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulip. Thank you, David. And tonight's show was produced by Ann Harper. Thank you, Ann. Join us next week on City Visions, where we'll have our final night of election coverage with a rundown of many of the issues on next week's ballot. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.